Atheist Nomads, episode 76, news for January 8, 2015. The day after we recorded was the day of the attack on the Charlie Hebdo magazine in France, and then the standoff in the grocery store, and all the other crazy stuff that was going on there. So we don't talk about it in this episode, but do want to at least say that they think they're protecting the reputation of the prophet. They're not. And that's something that's so incredibly obvious that even the head of Hezbollah in Lebanon agrees. Can't get much more fucked up than what they're doing. You don't respond to words with mass murder. Anyway, now for the episode. Atheist Nomads is proudly brought to you by Archway Hosting. Check out their low-price, full-featured hosting solutions at archwayhosting.com. That's A-R-C-H-W-A-Y hosting.com. We are the Atheist Nomads, bringing you history, science, politics, religion, and interviews with leaders in the atheist community. Not all those who wander are lost. Welcome to another episode of Atheist Nomads. This is episode number 76. I am Dustin, and joining me as always is Wesley.
How's it going?
Going well. How about you?
It's an interesting time of year.
Yeah.
I don't know if I should be happy or if I should be sad. My mom, who died a few years ago, just had her birthday. So, yeah. Rather melancholy, let's say that. Morose. I'm a morose motherfucker. How about that? How about you? How you doing?
I'm exhausted, but good.
Yeah? The holiday or travel or what you got going on?
Yeah, with all the travel, So, Christmas Eve, headed out to Idaho Falls with Lauren to spend time with her family. I got back that Sunday, worked 2 days, and then New Year's Eve, drove out to Grants Pass with about 200 miles of packed snow.
Nice.
And then day after New Year's, we went to the Redwoods and had lunch in Crescent City, California. And then drove back with only ice and packed snow over the pass. The rest was all nice and clear. But I have driven like 1,900 miles.
Not bad.
Far enough to go from Boise to Chicago. And then tomorrow for work, I will be driving back out to Idaho Falls and then coming back on Thursday. So this episode, if I'm lucky, I'll get it all finished up when I get back from Idaho Falls.
Yeah, so sorry that it's late. That one's my depressive self's fault. We didn't get to record yesterday.
In part. I would have been stretching to get it, editing done today and last little bit maybe on Thursday anyway. And I wasn't really feeling up to recording yesterday either. I was quite exhausted. I think I went to bed at 9:30.
Yeah?
Yeah. So not all your fault.
All right.
You gave me the out that I wanted.
Well, then glad to help. Glad to be a service. Oh, boy.
Yeah, that sucks, though, that, yeah, everything with your mom. That's yeah. One of those things that I'll be with you for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah, I know that she died sometime in September 2007. Can't tell you the date. Don't know.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. What do you have for us for history?
This day in history, January 8th, 1835. Just start with a little chuckle here. The United States national debt is zero for the only time. Can't really even back that one up, but I found that one on Wikipedia. I thought that was just too cute to pass up. You know, it has that kind of ring of possible truthfulness to it. Uh-huh. So it's kind of scary.
Yeah. But,
yep, not even researching that one.
As I recall from school, that may very well be true. We had a lot of debt from the Revolutionary War and War of 1812.
Yeah.
I know for sure that the U.S. has had debt consistently since the Civil War.
Hmm.
It was just always really small until, you know.
the last 100 or so.
Yeah, yeah. Ballooning out of control since the Great Depression.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I think our debt holders have changed, but not much else has changed, really. I think our masters are pretty much now China.
Yeah, yeah. For the longest time, it was pretty much all held by Americans through federal bonds.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, now it's, well, not.
Man, I've got some old bonds I need to cash in, too. Shit. Yeah, man.
Yeah, you might want to do that before, you know.
Before everything collapses.
Yeah. I was going to say the Tea Party finally forces a default.
Oh, shit. Yeah. Or so, yeah, either keep them for a lot longer or cash them in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The last thing I want to do is buy loaves of bread measured with a piece of money like they did in the Civil War.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Okay. On to a, well, kind of heartening message. In this day in history, 1867, African American men are granted the right to vote in Washington, D.C. So, yeah, moving up on the suffrage scale there. Man, that was kind of cool, even though, you know, granted I say black men, but women, yeah, didn't really, weren't really included, let's say, just yet. Probably, what, another 50, 60 years until that happened.
For most of the country, yeah.
Most of the country, yeah. We covered Wyoming on that quite a while ago. But mm-hmm. Yeah, that's pretty cool about Wyoming. But, yeah. Congress overrode President Andrew Jackson's veto of a bill granting all adult male citizens of the District of Columbia the right to vote. And the bill became law. First time in American history that granted black men the right to vote. So, holy shit.
At least explicitly. I know in some of the you know, earlier times before that in New England, when it was only property owners that had the right to vote, there mm-hmm. were actually a few black property owners.
Yeah.
And they could vote.
Well.
But that was pretty rare.
I was going to give a half-hearted hooray.
Yeah.
So, this day in history, 1982, the breakup of AT&T. Yeah, AT&T agreed to divest itself of 22 subdivisions. So, I don't know if you've ever heard the phrase Mama Bell and all the baby bells. Like, I think, what, like Sprint? I think that was formerly a baby bell, became a, you know, a wired carrier, then a wireless carrier. There's just tons of little companies that AT&T had to just kind of get out of and sell off so that they weren't considered a monopoly.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it took me that entire time to remember the word monopoly. But, yeah, shit. Probably the once and probably the last time that our country has actually done that. Such a major company to have them get broken up like that.
Yeah, the other big ones you hear about would be Standard Oil and U.S. Steel.
Those were a long time ago.
Yeah.
Man.
Long, long time.
Yeah, I've heard of a couple calls for that to happen at Google, but it seems kind of silly right now.
There's also calls for that with Microsoft in the 90s.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Yeah, to split off Windows from Office and, well, Windows from everything.
Yeah. Which, what's kind of weird with that, you know, you look at what they did with AT&T, and for the most part, they split off the local service from the long-distance service.
Yeah.
And so it actually did create some competition in the marketplace and additional companies that could compete. If you mm-hmm. split Microsoft between Windows and Office, it wouldn't do anything.
Yeah. I don't really... There's... Most of the competing products for both of those are free.
Yeah. Yeah. The one change that would have would be
Internet Explorer.
Well, Windows doesn't make Microsoft money.
Hmm.
Office does.
Mm-hmm.
So that for the most part, they give away Windows in hopes that people buy Office. And so that would force them to actually start charging for Windows to make any money.
Well, they've always deeply discounted the OEMs to basically selling cheap versions of Windows to computer companies.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think that would really change. I mean, they'd just sell the license and then one disk to the company and they can install it on bunches. Probably, but not much. They'd probably make it the minimal, you know, like charge a penny or something like that.
Oh, they'd have to go a lot more than that if they weren't making buku bucks off of Office.
Well.
Yeah. Anyway, that's getting off topic.
I don't think they'd break off the Xbox from that.
No. And Microsoft thought about just doing that on their own anyway. But going back to AT&T, one thing that was kind of interesting with that is, after, you know, years after that, you had Singular and Bell South, I think it was, that ended up, I think Bell South bought AT&T, and then Singular, which had been part of AT&T at one point under a different name, merged with Bell South and created the new AT&T. The baby Bells bought out the old mama Bell.
But those were all like wireless carriers, right?
Not exclusively.
Hmm.
Just mostly the wired services south and Midwest. I believe I was living in Michigan when that happened, and my internet service went from being from Bell South to AT&T.
I remember I've had cable internet for basically as long as I can remember, since like 2000, 2001, somewhere in there. But when I started, it was Comcast. Well, it was AT&T at home. And then a couple of years later, Comcast bought them out and it became Comcast at home. Kind of weird.
Yeah.
That's when they put caps on, bastards. Oh, caps. Anyways, I know we've talked about this before, but never on this day. So, this day in history, 2005, the nuclear Los Angeles class USS San Francisco submarine collides at full speed with an undersea mountain close to Guam. Yeah, one man is killed, but the sub services, and me and my guys at Puget Sound Naval Shipyard helped repair it. Crazy. So, yeah, every submarine has basically six tanks of air up front and six in the back. Three on the left side, and another way to think of that is six on the left and six on the right, three up front and three in the back, you know, so kind of divvy those up. When it had like a glancing blow off that mountain, and it destroyed all of the tanks on one side, one of the front, and one of the tanks on the right side was completely destroyed. One was badly leaking and one was fine. So the entirety of the front of the submarine is only being held up by 1.5 tanks of air.
Damn. So,
hooray for redundancy.
Wow.
And it still surfaced. Yeah. Crazy. The man that died actually was because of the collision. He hit his head on something and died, from what I understand. So it's not like there was a rupture of any sort, which they would have never recovered from. So, man, you know, for all that money that the government wastes, you know, it saved a whole bunch of lives that day. You know, not that I like all this money that's being spent on all this crap, but not that I think we need it all, but, well, yeah, at least it saved some people's lives in that case.
If you're going to do it, at least do it right.
Oh, yeah, they overdo it like a motherfucker, yeah. I tell you what.
And if you're going to be putting people underwater,
bring them back up.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we learned that lesson in the late 60s with a submarine called the Thresher, which we were putting out for sea trials. There was communication when they were doing some shallow dives and taking it a little bit further, pushing the boat, seeing how it worked. And basically, the boat got a leak and everybody on board died. After that, they developed a program called SubSafe to help, you know, take care of all these problems. To basically compartmentalize the subs, to make sure that everything is held to much tighter tolerances, and that shit worked.
So to create unsinkable boats, basically.
More or less, yeah.
Well, unsinkable, except for when you want to sink it.
Basically to make a overly rigorous step-by-step process to do everything and to make sure that what goes down comes back up.
Awesome.
With whole bunches of paperwork. Holy shit. Of course. It's government. What are you going to expect?
Yeah. And back then it would have all been paper.
Oh, it's still all paper. Trust me.
Hmm.
It's the scary part. No matter what's on a computer, it's on paper too.
Damn.
And this day in 2011, the attempted assassination of Arizona Representative Gabriel Giffords and the subsequent shooting in Casas Adobes, Arizona, at a Safeway grocery store, for which Jared Lee Lautner is subsequently arrested for killing 6 people, wounding 13, including Gabriel Giffords. Goddamn.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, whenever they say all 3 of your names, it's not going to be a good story. Jared Lee Lautner. Yeah, she was a Democrat, native Arizonan, a popular politician, and just the 3rd woman from Arizona ever elected to Congress, even though, you know, I'm sure there's more than 3 women ever. You know, even though there's been more than 3 women that have ever lived in Arizona, she was only the 3rd to be elected to their Congress. Anyways, that aside, she was outside, sitting at a table, speaking with constituents who had lined up to talk with her. 10 minutes later, Lautner, another Arizona resident, approached and shot her at point-blank range with a 9mm, then opened fire on other people standing in line, and a short time later, when Lautner was trying to reload, bystanders tackled him and held him until police arrived. Giffords, who got shot, of course, her skull was fractured, and pieces of the brain and such entered the left side of her brain, and there is actually reports that she didn't even survive. But this Lautner guy, he ended up getting charged with a whole mess of stuff. This is kind of crazy. Yeah, so this Lautner guy, not a nice guy. Came to light that in fall 2010, Lautner was informed by officials of Tucson's Pima Community College, where he was a student, that he actually needed to get some psychological tests, essentially, before he could return to school because of some bizarre behavior in classes and in the library. So instead of doing that, he just dropped out. Kind of crazy about that.
Mm-hmm.
Oops, crazy, sorry. Anyways, Lautner pled guilty to 19 of the crimes that he was charged with, including killing 6 people. As part of the plea agreement, federal prosecutors agreed not to seek the death penalty against him. So November 8th, 2012, he was charged and sentenced to life in prison without parole. On the upside, though, Gabrielle Giffords, you know, she's made great strides in learning how to talk again, learning how to walk and move again. She's doing a lot better. She actually wrote a memoir with the help of her husband, so it's been going much better, even though she had to leave Congress, you know, not too long after she got shot, of course. But, man, she's one tough cookie. Is that sexist?
Mm.
Tough cookie.
Maybe. listeners, you can write us at contact@atheistnomads.com and let us know.
Write your hate mail to Wesley at atheistnomads.com. Anyways.
Yeah, one cool little twist here. Her husband was an astronaut.
Yeah.
And she had made sufficient recovery to be able to go and witness his launch for the final space shuttle mission, of which he was the commander.
Badass.
Yeah. On that note, it's time for science and technology, and this time it's going to be a little bit different twist. This is all going to be about woo this time.
Hmm.
And practitioners of woo getting their just desserts.
Hmm. I love comeuppance.
Yes. So first off, we have a Ottawa doctor. And yes, she is an actual physician. And unfortunately, not all physicians practice good, proper scientific medicine. She is a alleged specialist in environmental health. This is not a recognized medical specialty in her home province of Ontario. And she had a suicidal teenager come to her for care, and she treated her with vitamins. Vitamins.
Let's not call her this doctor. It's Dr. Jennifer Margaret Armstrong.
Yeah, okay, yes, yeah.
And, yeah, this very nice lady, I'm sure, didn't even give a psychological review to this teenager to see what actual mental state she was in.
Yeah.
Basic steps.
Yeah. She admitted to the Ontario College of Physicians and Surgeons she didn't provide the basic standard of care, which would have included that mental health assessment and, you know, referring her to a competent psychiatrist or another more competent doctor. And this patient was not just suicidal, but it already had numerous hospitalizations from suicide attempts.
So, might have been a fucking clue.
Yeah, yeah. And you'd think at a minimum that would have come up during the medical history portion of the evaluation. And yeah, didn't bother with any of that. Instead, she tried to treat her for environmental toxins, yeah. Like things that we don't, that aren't really problems. Her focus, from the disciplinary findings, there was no conventional treatments offered or documented for her psychiatric symptoms. The patient was not treated for her psychiatric symptoms by another physician, according to the chart. Dr. Armstrong did not refer to this patient to another physician for the psychiatric symptoms or her seizures. That's right, seizures. The patient did not have a family physician. Instead, Dr. Armstrong concentrated on giving vitamins, minerals, and amino acids, which are not the standard of care. Her focus regarding this patient was on chemical sensitivities and metal toxicities.
You know, the part that I love is pulled straight from her website for the doctor's clinic that she worked at. Armstrong Clinic talked about helping people who are made sick by constant exposure to low doses of chemicals and energies in their environment, from mold to heavy metals to electromagnetic radiation. Holy shit. Treatments included, of course, vitamin infusions, LR tests, and detoxification. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, if you hear some motherfucker talking about energies and detox, fucking run.
Yeah.
And report them to some medical board. Yeah. Holy shit.
Detox isn't a real thing unless you are going into withdrawals. Then it's a real thing. Detoxing from alcohol or heroin, yeah, that's real. Other than that, you've got a fucking liver and you have kidneys. They are there to handle low doses of chemicals. And environmental energies, electromagnetic radiation, that doesn't fucking do anything. Ah, God damn.
The crazy thing is that this, you know, this whole clinic has had a giant waiting list for people to get into it. And since none of these treatments are covered by Canada's medical system, people are having to pay out of pocket, you know, between, well, usually large sums of money to get treatments there.
Yeah.
Kind of crazy.
I'm glad that they're coming down on her.
Oh,
but
yeah.
She got off really light. She gets to keep her medical license and can continue treating patients as long as they get another doctor. So all those patients can keep coming to her. She just has to report to their other doctor regularly what's going on.
Hmm. That's how long is that going to last?
There is no time limit on this condition.
Which is a good-ish thing, but, I mean, honestly, how long is she going to be reporting to other doctors? I don't think that part's going to last very long.
Well, realistically, how long are they going to be following up on it?
Exactly.
Because as soon as they stop, she'll probably stop.
Oh, yeah. So, smack on the wrist, but I hope that another person doesn't have to die for her to, you know, get a good prison sentence.
Yeah.
But it's a start. Fuck. Boy.
Yeah.
And congratulations to OttawaCitizen.com for having a really cool website.
Yeah, it is so slick.
All right.
The way everything pops out and moves around, it's nice. It makes me happy. It's
pretty slick. So yeah, check it out yourself.
Australia has had some awesome come out of it. The Australian Competition and Consumer Commission.
The ACCC.
Yeah. They have convinced a court that a homeopathic company was being misleading and deceptive when they claimed that their remedies provided a viable alternative to the pertussis vaccine.
Ooh, whooping cough.
This goes back to when Homeopathy Plus posted 3 articles claiming that the pertussis vaccine was unreliable and ineffective, and that homeopathy was good and effective, not only against whooping cough, but malaria, dengue fever, Japanese encephalitis, leptospirosis, and meningococcal disease.
Oh, great.
Yeah. Yeah. It was the whooping cough articles that really got the attention of the Australia's Therapeutic Goods Administration Advertising Complaint Resolution Panel and Therapeutic Goods Administration, which is a really long name for a governmental body.
Yeah, horrible, horrible name. this is based off of Fran Sheffield, who is a well-known quack homeopathy dealer down in Australia. So this is awesome to see some smackdown by this.
Yeah. Yeah, they'd initially just tried to get some retractions on those published claims, and Homeopathy Plus decided not to do that, which is when they got a federal case filed against them. The penalties and other injunctive orders will be coming after a hearing in February. So we don't have it yet, but this is going to be awesome.
That's definitely something I look forward to hearing more about in the future.
Yes.
Well, February.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Now, of course, what would be nice would be if some court or governmental body would just go after homeopathy for making claims, period, considering the fact that it's straight up placebo. Yeah. And finally, in California, there has finally been, after 5 years of vaccination rates dropping, there was a slight increase in the percentage of fully vaccinated kindergartners. It went in 2013, it was 90.2%. 2014, it was 90.4%.
Well, 0.2%, at least it's trending upward a little bit.
It's a change.
Yeah.
And in this editorial from the LA Times, they admit that the increase is not a big increase. But sure, the significance is just the fact that after the vaccination rates have been dropping for 5 years, the fact that it's finally turned around is huge.
I believe we have to have at least 94% to 96% to get what you call the herd immunity or the community immunity to help protect people that can't get vaccinated.
Yeah. It's, well, depending on the scenario and everything, it's like 85% to 95%. In the low 90s, there's still decent herd immunity, but your herd is a lot more susceptible to outbreaks. At 95%, you've got damn near impenetrable fortress. But one thing that's kind of cool is this increase may, at least in part, be the result of a new law that went into effect in California. That requires parents of public school students who try to get a personal belief exemption that is not explicitly for religious reasons to have to get information about vaccination from a health professional. And then after that, they can still take the exemption.
So basically try and make it a pain in the ass for the parents, and then hopefully the parents will just do it.
Yeah. that the number of personal belief exemptions had been rising, and then 2014 it dropped from 3.2% to 2.5% of parents. Now, they also found that the vaccination rates are also going up for private school students, which do not fall under that new law. And there's some speculation that some of this could be due to parents hearing about all of the different outbreaks that have been going on. You know, we live in an era when people making decisions
from polio. You don't see people in iron lungs. You don't see people walking around with braces because fucking vaccines work.
I knew one person growing up who had had polio as a child, one of my mom's cousins. And other than that, I learned about smallpox, polio, measles, mumps, whooping cough in history class.
Right? In fucking books.
Yeah. Those were diseases people had way back when. Those were the types of things from the dark ages of the Wild West in the 1950s.
But I don't wish any kid harm, but you know what? As media centric as our nation is, it would do some good to have, you know, like some star's kid have fucking polio or some shit. To it's like, oh shit, you know, that, you know, fucking diseases are real.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just don't get all this new agey or distrust of doctors or vaccines.
Now, one problem with polio is if that came back to the U.S., we would have to start vaccinating against that again.
Mandatory vaccinating.
Because that all stopped.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I was never vaccinated against polio.
I don't think I was.
Yeah.
There's a few years between us. I don't think I was.
That's something that stopped eventually because there wasn't any need. They eliminated the virus. Measles, mumps, rubella, pertussis, we haven't managed to eliminate those. There have always been small pockets, and they're still bad enough in a lot of countries that they can routinely come back in. And we have to keep vigilant against those. That, or would be even better, have a smallpox-style global campaign to eliminate them. But realistically, that would fare worse than polio, which still hasn't been successful worldwide. So, like, three countries with polio where they're resisting the vaccines. They're not trying to make the virus. They're not trying to make you sterile. They're just trying to keep you from getting severely disabled or dead.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to fucking walk with crutches or fucking iron lungs, then God bless you. All right. Yeah. Go to those countries.
All right.
And I meant God bless you in the southern sense of, you know, aren't you a special person?
God bless you as a thinly veiled fuck you.
Yeah, pretty much. Oh, that's a good one.
All right. Let's go ahead and move on to politics and religion. First off, we've got a couple of updates on our most recent guests. First off, we've got Ryan Bell. We were just a little early when we interviewed him, for him to do the big reveal. Granted, anybody who listened to that interview would not be surprised by what the big reveal was.
Yeah, we kind of saw this one coming.
Yes. as he wrote on his blog, December 31st, let me get to the right line. Now, at the end of this year, I have discovered no evidence that a God exists. He goes on a bit more, dropping down a couple of paragraphs. Today, I continue my life as a humanist and an atheist. Though I wouldn't have used the label at the time, I've been a Christian humanist for the past decade or more. Humanism feels to me more like something I'm keeping, as I've made some other rather significant changes in my worldview. My atheism is of the agnostic variety, admitting along with the vast majority of all other atheists I have spoken to that we cannot know for a fact there is no God. Here I stand with the somewhat uncomfortable but oddly liberating conviction that there is no God. It's well worth it to go and read this article if you haven't already been following the Year Without God blog on Patheos. It's not a bad time to start, and the link is in the show notes.
Yeah, it's kind of like me, you know, hearing about a really good TV series from other people. I'll just ignore it for a season or two and then, you know, go over there and catch up on the whole thing. So give it a check out. Now you have like a good bulk of stuff to read.
Yeah. Now, of course, this has brought on a fresh round of criticism and flack. This time, pretty much all from the religious.
Hmm.
This first one I'm going to share is from the Adventist Review.
All right.
Description of the author, Don McIntosh, lists him as being at Weimar College, which to anybody who has an Adventist background knows if Weimar College is associated, it's batshit crazy. They were a self-supporting institution that was on the kind of the lunatic fringe of the Adventist Church.
Hmm.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, he's very concerned because... one of the awesome lines from this, concern because Bell's experience with all its questioning reflect the unwelcome reality that some people, even after years of Adventist education and acculturation, will reject the faith. The truth, if you look at the statistics, however, is that most people will reject the faith, especially after years of Adventist education and acculturation. But yeah, he's got concern.
So just out of my curiosity, this Don McIntosh, you know, going to Weimar College, is that kind of like, the Westboro Baptist Church calling you crazy or kind of loony? It's the outer fringe calling the inner fringe kind of crazy.
Westboro, I would say, is way, way, way further out on the fringe.
Sure, sure, sure.
Weimar...
Same idea where it's a fringe of the fringe. Like if somebody said Weimar, you'd be like, oh, one of those guys.
Yeah. That was kind of my thought when I saw that in his description. He's one of them. Yeah. But yeah, what's kind of funny though is he's concerned because he's sure that Bell's whole journey is just depression.
Hmm.
He says that it shows all the signs and symptoms of a person struggling with major depression. If God exists, say those who are depressed, where is he? Why doesn't he reveal himself?
Hmm. Spiritual counselor Don McIntosh from Weimar College knows how to diagnose depression now. All right.
If you're an atheist, you're depressed.
Oh, my mistake.
Yeah. Yeah. Obviously, you must be depressed because you don't know the love of Jesus Christ and the happiness of the Adventist community.
Mm, the love of Jesus Christ.
And the deliciousness of Linkettes. but he still has hope anyway.
Good for him. The
prodigal son can come home.
And the first comment I see from Ham and Eggs Richard. I would like to challenge Ryan to try just being a church member for 1 year again. Reading the Bible for himself and praying that God will guide his ways for 1 year. After the year is over, then he can decide once again if it's worth it. Motherfucker.
Mm-hmm.
This guy was a pastor.
Yeah.
He knows his shit. He's been doing that 1 year thing for the last 10 years.
Yeah, and it's not like the Year Without God was just an experiment from a Bible-believing Christian. It was somebody who that was all that was left. It wouldn't work very well for him to go backwards now.
Man. Anyways.
Yeah.
Good on you. Fucking Ryan, keep that shit up. And keep helping people with path. That's awesome.
And then from Charisma News, there was an article on why are so many Christians turning into atheists? Again, talking about Ryan Bell. And this lady... Jennifer LeClaire, she's one of the senior editors of Charisma News. She thinks this is all part of the great falling away.
Oh, so this is part of the apocalypse, or mm-hmm. leading up to it. All right.
Yes, because Jesus said that in the last days, the love of many would grow cold because iniquity will abound.
Mm. Iniquity. Yum.
Yeah. one of the great things with prophecy is wherever you look, there it is.
If you want to find it, you will.
Uh-huh.
Just like every great conspiracy theory.
And when you describe things in such vague terms, a great falling away, you can always find somebody that fits with that, whether it's the youth leaving the church or going astray, whether it's other denominations that you don't think are doing things right.
Oh, come on. How about fucking video games or comic books before that?
Yeah.
Leather jackets.
Heavy metal.
Oh, goodness.
Rock
music.
Don't
get me started.
Dancing, movie theaters.
Elvis's hips gyrating.
Mm. Yeah. before that, shit, there's always been something you could look at.
Oh, those
for that.
Crazy kids.
Yeah, but I do think it's kind of cute, though, that they're trying to look at the death of Christianity as being all in accordance with prophecy.
Find me a fucking wandering Jew for 2,000 years, then I'll start believing something. Then I'll at least start, like, there might be a thing.
And moving along, from Linda Martin, website she was talking about being about ready to be launched has launched. It is idahochildren.org.
Nice and easy. Okay, I like that.
And has tons of information on what the problem is and how to fix it.
It's good infographics.
Yes.
Faith healing laws by state. Breaks it down by color. Man, oh man. All right.
Yeah. And we're going to go ahead and move from there on to more of the regular news. The first one's a really tragic story. By now, I'm sure everyone has heard about Lila Alcorn's suicide. This is a 17-year-old trans woman from Ohio who threw herself in front of a semi.
Fuck.
On an interstate. Yeah. She left home in the middle of the night, walked 4 miles to the interstate, and yeah. She had a suicide note scheduled and ready to be posted to Tumblr.
They've since taken her Tumblr site down, but
yeah.
I'm sure you can still find it.
In the article I've got linked to in the show notes, they quote a lot of it. For example, please don't be sad. It's for the better. The life I would have lived isn't worth living because I'm transgender. I could go into detail explaining why I feel that way, but this note is probably going to be lengthy enough as it is. To put it simply, I feel like a girl trapped in a boy's body, and I felt that way ever since I was 4. I never knew there was a word for that feeling, nor was it possible for a boy to become a girl, so I never told anyone, and I just continued to do traditional boyish things to try to fit in. Then at the age of 14, she found out about transgender and sex changes and
just fucking cried from happiness to know that there was an actual thing.
All of a sudden it clicked. There. All that confusion and uncertainty, all of a sudden it all made sense. And, well, a 14-year-old being excited about something, what'd she do? She went and told her mom. And, again, quoting from the letter, after 10 years of confusion, I finally understood who I was. I immediately told my mom, and she reacted extremely negatively, telling me that it was a phase, that I'd never truly be a girl, that God doesn't make mistakes, that I'm wrong. If you are reading this, parents, please don't tell this to your kids. Even if you are a Christian or you're against transgender people, don't ever say that to someone, especially your kid. That won't do anything but make them hate themselves. That's exactly what it did to me.
Fuck.
And according to her mom, at that point, Lila just stopped talking about being transgender.
Problem solved, I'm sure.
No shit. If your parents aren't being supportive, why would you continue talking to them? Her parents responded. Their response was very, very heavy-handed, to say the least. Abusive, easily. They pulled her out of school and homeschooled her. They cut off her access to social networking sites, limited how much time she could spend with friends. And
it must be the internet's fault, of course.
And then started sending her to Christian counselors.
Right.
Again, from the letter, my mom started taking me to a therapist, but would only take me to Christian therapists who were all very biased, so I never actually got the therapy I needed to cure me of my depression. I only got more Christians telling me that I was selfish and wrong and that I should look to God for help.
Right. That sounds like it didn't help at all.
Yeah. And so in the end, she decided that killing herself would be the best thing to do, that it would end her pain and suffering and possibly help promote change in the country. The change that we need is going to be hard.
Something in this CNN article that really hurt me was that after Leela's death, a Facebook post apparently from Carla Acorn, you know, Leela's mom, said that her child, quote, went home to heaven this morning. He was out for an early morning walk and was hit by a truck. Thank you for the messages and kindness and concern you have sent our way. Please continue to keep us in your thoughts. I don't think Carly even understands that she's being hurtful, and that is definitely a big fucking part of the problem.
Yeah. She thinks that she did everything right. And Christian, any Christian parent, heck, most parents of any kind in that situation would respond, however they respond, would think they're doing things right. But
I even have a feeling that Carla might still think that this was not a suicide. Because,
yeah.
Well, suicide would put you not in heaven.
Not all Christians have that opinion.
Okay.
I've heard arguments that suicide is a irrational act that
they're trying to get God would like forgive. A psychological loophole.
Yeah.
Mental illness loophole.
That you're not in your right mind at that point, so you're not accountable.
Right. Well, I'm thinking that those Christians would be the transgender accepting kind.
Not necessarily.
Huh.
I heard that a few times in the Adventist world.
Wow. All right.
And that was even without an alternative of hell.
I bet that didn't come from Weimar College, though.
No. Yeah. But yeah, the kind of change that needs to happen is, really, at its core, everyone in our society, including parents, accepting everyone for who they are, period. And when somebody tells you about who they are, accepting what they say as being right. And not saying ever to a kid, oh, it's just a phase.
This is advice that I know I've given to atheists and agnostics before, especially when they're young. This might just be sound advice for any kids that are transgender too. If there's a chance you think your parents will come out negatively against this, don't fucking tell them.
Yeah.
Don't tell them until you're out from under the roof or they're done paying for your college or whatever. Cause you know, you could get kicked out. This could happen. They fucking just pull their money, you know, from your college education. I'm sorry, but don't fucking tell them if you think there's a chance something bad could happen. Sorry, but that's me.
Yeah. As far as the broader national picture on trying to fix it, I think a good place to start would be eliminating the whole concept of Christian therapy.
Reparative therapies. Oh, yeah.
There's therapy, and it should all be licensed, and it should all be scientifically based. Anything that's not is bullshit. There's a lot of Christians that I know wouldn't like that because they don't want to hear about science. They want to hear the Bible. Yep.
They want to hear warm fuzzies from God.
Yeah. But turn to God. That's not the answer. Ever. Yeah. There's never a good place to end on a tragic story. But yeah, this is definitely a tragedy. I hope it will bring about some change. At the very least, I found it encouraging that every news article I looked at used the correct pronouns. I'm sure there's some that didn't, but all the ones I saw did. All right, moving on. In India, there's a guru who...
There was.
died last January, and his followers believe that he is just in a very deep meditative state.
Oh, right, right. Okay.
So they put him on ice. Yeah, to keep him from stinking.
Yeah.
And so now he's in a freezer, and someone claiming to be his son filed suit, and a judge on December 1 ordered that he be cremated, as his son wishes, and to stop this charade. And then a couple of weeks later, on the 15th of December, a two-judge panel, if that's even really a panel, issued a stay, putting it off till at least February 9.
Right. So this one's awesome. This wouldn't even really be a debate, but this particular guru was really fucking rich.
Yeah.
Of course, his followers want to keep him, quote unquote, alive, so they keep the money. Because if he's dead, then, well, the family, like his son here, would get the money. So, yeah, I don't even think the followers believe any of this bullshit. They just want to keep on fucking using this guru's money. Dead guru's money.
Milking as much as they can. Yeah.
Fucking A.
Yeah. Oh, and he's actually not just a guru.
Hmm.
He's a Hindu godman.
Right.
Ashutosh Maharaj.
Well, godman needs to stop pretending to be a popsicle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So by the time this is all said and done, and he's presumably cremated February 9, he will have been dead and on ice for more than a year. Heck, authorities declared him dead January 29.
And I'm sure that was even a couple weeks or more after he died.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness. Oh, I won't say stupid people. I'll say selfish people.
So, generally, I try to not bother with crazy assholes, individual crazy assholes. Sure. On occasion, it's worth a chuckle. And this is definitely one of those cases. Matt Barber of the Faith and Freedom radio program is outraged by a San Jose State University decision to remove the InterVarsity Christian Fellowship's official recognition because they failed to comply with the university's non-discrimination policy.
Right.
And so I'm going to go ahead and play his words for you.
It's an excuse to discriminate against Christians. That's all it is, and it's stupid. I mean, it's just plain stupid, Matt. Imagine going to the African American organization on your campus and saying that you have to allow an open, avowed white supremacist to as your leader of this African American organization, maybe a student branch of the NAACP. I mean, that is no different than what we're talking about here, but because it's Christians, Matt, and this is the truth. Really, the last group here in the United States that is fair game, that is an open target for discrimination such as this, are Christians.
Right. So, a policy that applies to everybody on campus shouldn't apply to this Christian group that wants to discriminate against people.
Uh-huh. Because it's discrimination to not allow them to discriminate.
Obviously.
Yeah.
The nicest thing I can say about Matt Barber, he is well coiffed. Besides that, he sounds like an absolute asshole.
Yeah. I would say the nicest thing about him is that he left Idaho.
Oh, so he's one of yours.
I believe I've heard that he used to live here in Boise, and yeah, he at least left. So thank you, Matt Barber, for leaving us. But, the funny thing with all this is just the whole false analogy that he uses, the pulling in the whole race thing. No organization would be forced to vote somebody in. If you have democratic elections, you can't throw out votes that are based on discrimination. It's just their votes. So if a white supremacist was up for a vote to be the head of a student branch of the NAACP, he would lose because he wouldn't fit with the organization. If he wanted to be a member, That's a different story. But his whole claim about them, you know, being able to force that guy into to be a leader, you know, that's bullshit. The InterVarsity Christian Fellowship wouldn't be forced to elect a gay student to be the leader. They would just be prohibited from preventing one from winning an election if the votes were actually in that favor, and prevent them from being members.
You know what? I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that if a white supremacist wanted to join the Black Student Union and was prevented, there'd be an issue. But if the white supremacist went in there, was polite, not a problem. But if he went in there and was an asshole, the Black Student Union or whatever group would have every right to kick his ass out of there.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of at a loss here. Asshole student is asshole. Kick him out. Fine. I don't know. Big disconnect. I just don't.
Yeah, it's all just crazy bullshit stuff that the religious do. Yeah.
And that's why I just had to fucking shake my head sometime. All right. So, moving on along then. I hear there's a town that has a new owner.
Oh, wait. Before we get to that, we just got a comment on the Ottawa environmental doctor from the Sandra Clare, who was she was in on the competition we did quite a while back. She was one of the contestants. Her comment was, and I just want to read this. I had a doctor who wanted to treat my PTSD and major depressive disorder with magnets and seemed seriously offended that I asked for scientific proof his methods worked. When he directed me to the internet and a bunch of anecdotal evidence, I waved goodbye. Cassandra, good for you.
Fucking A.
Yeah.
I just had to like that one. Goodness.
All right. So anyway, yes, there's a town in Alabama that is has declared a new owner. It's not the people. It is God. Oh. Yep. They passed a resolution that, says the town is one city under God, and that God is the owner of the city. I wonder if that means that as a result, God will be able to affect the elections and decide who wins, or just throw out the elections and just let God decide who's the new mayor. And the editorial on it, it'd say, mind you, some of other religions or no religions might fuss, but if our coins can say in God we trust, we see no harm in acknowledging the Almighty at Christmas. We think that the whole fuss about cleaning God from the specter of public service has been much ado about nothing. In the same vein, this resolution may not change the city either, but it will not hurt. And if anyone in Marion County deserves our thanks, it is him for all he has blessed us with. Except for the fact that, well, the harm of saying that the city belongs to God would be very alienating for non-Christians.
There's a local guy in my atheist group who actually got his name middle name legally changed to Data, like, you know, the android from Star Trek. I would love to see some judge like that let some dude change his name to God, go down there and claim the city for his own.
Yeah,
that'd be a chuckle.
Well, God does like our Facebook page and comment on there. Maybe he could go down.
Right. We're like, hey, I got the fucking Twitter. Hook that shit up.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness.
And I did just have to name drop there. It's been fun recently having some comments come in from God. yeah. Like he said that he didn't like Ryan Bell anyway.
Ah, yeah. Traitor.
All right, let's move from that. Oh, and Hemet has a password along to the FFRF about this one, so, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a nice letter in the mail soon.
Oh, yeah. Let's go ahead and move to a fun one. There are hundreds of churches out there who do MMA, mixed martial arts.
I was kind of thinking Fight Club, but okay.
Yeah, there are more than 700 evangelical churches in the U.S. that have fights.
Seriously.
This is shocking. It's crazy.
I love the first line of this article from Raw Story. Can you love your neighbor as yourself? and at the same time, knee him in the face as hard as you can. Christian, so that's coming from American Christian mixed martial arts champion Scott Bam Bam Sullivan, as he was speaking to the Times from London.
Yeah.
Motherfucker, really? Wow.
It really puts a whole nother spin on turning the other cheek.
Oh. I always thought of spankings for that one, but I guess no, that's just like a good beating. Wow.
Yeah. There's a pretty, maybe funny is the word, I'm not completely sure, quote from Mark Driscoll in here. I don't think that there's anything purer than putting two men in a cage and just seeing which man is better. And as a pastor, as a Bible teacher, I think God made men masculine. Men are made for combat. Men are made for conflict. Men are made for dominion.
Which basically means, well, women aren't.
Yeah. And men are animals, so...
Wasn't it?
Yeah.
Well, and Mark Driscoll is also the one that made the comment, famous comment of women being penis homes.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of funny with all that, though, is, you know, Jesus presented the majority of the claims about him in the Bible are that, you know, very pacifistic.
Hmm.
There's a few that aren't, but the vast majority have a pacifist mentality. And to honor a pacifist by kicking the shit out of somebody else doesn't really seem quite right.
No. Oh, goodness.
Oh, one thing from this article is that they do trace this whole fighting in church back to the Victorian era.
Wow.
Yeah, at that time it was boxing. They were trying to counter the perceived feminization of church and try to attract men.
Well, you want to attract men to church? Bring women in.
Well, women actually...
Men don't go to church on their own unless they're, like, looking for women or already with a woman.
The average church in the U.S.?
Yeah.
2/3 women.
Yeah.
So, obviously, that draw isn't working, so they're having to try other stuff. That's but why hey, there's things like the whole come to church and get a gun.
No, yeah. Man, I would go to church for a gun. Shit.
All right, and for our final story, there was... I wish I'd heard about this one in time for the War on Christmas roundup, but a guy in, Jason Dixon in a suburb of Cincinnati, Ohio, runs a Halloween attraction, a haunted house, and took some of his stuff from that and went ahead and did a zombie nativity scene in his yard.
It's the cutest thing ever.
It is fucking amazing. You've got zombie wise men. One's holding on to a skull. You've got a pentagram over the manger. There's a little demon baby Jesus. There's skeletons laying around in the straw. Pretty fucking awesome.
Oh, yeah. Nighttime, it's all lit up. It's really cute.
Yeah.
You put some time into this.
Sycamore Township officials decided that it wasn't very good. They got complaints about debris around the home, and so they went and investigated it and decided that it violated the rules on the size and placement of yard structures. So they gave him two zoning violation notices and gave him until the day after Christmas to take it down. He has taken it down now, but he kept it up a few days past their demand time.
Hmm.
Yeah, he didn't take it down until New Year's Eve. And, yeah, this is just awesome.
He's actually has a Kickstarter going so he can make it bigger and better next year. So if that's your thing, you know, look it up. Toss him a few bucks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, silly. I'm sure that, you know, none of the other nativity displays in that town, you know, had the straw out there, got zoning notices either, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, if he could find a case of, well, to get the notice, you need to have a complaint first for it to be investigated. and likely nobody else would be complaining about a nativity scene.
But zombie nativities.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. One of his neighbors, her comment on it, she actually doesn't mind if he expands it next year. She said it's different and that it was quite the hit with her guests at a Christmas party.
Nice.
It's like being next to an amusement park. But yeah, there's a link to his Facebook page in the story. And from there you can get to the crowdfunding campaign he's doing.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. All right. And that's it for news. Before we get to feedback, one thing I started doing after I got done with my, like, two solid weeks of recording and editing was every story, well, nearly every story I look at, I am posting to the Facebook page, which automatically tweets it out. And I'd thought about doing this for quite a while. I'm not quite sure why I waited so long. The response has been pretty awesome. Our Facebook page reach has, you know, that first week went up like 7,000%. Yeah, the comments have been a lot of fun, and pretty good. We did get some feedback on that. I'm going to have to share from Alf, or no, excuse me, from Dave. He tweets at Gwen Experience, at Atheist Nomads, are you posting drunk? he sent that on Christmas. I believe it was Christmas Eve. Might have been Christmas Day that I had posted something. And yes, it was a mix of quite a few very high alcohol content beers and swipe.
Oh, nice.
And so I had a message go out that didn't quite make sense.
Nice. Well, it's good to know that somebody's reading.
Yeah. I fixed it on Facebook, but not on Twitter. And, oh, yeah. Yeah, so swipe plus alcohol means ugly.
Just a whoopsie.
Yeah. For other feedback, though, from Alf via email. Listening to your podcast from Thailand. Keep up the good work, Alf. Thank you, Alf.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it's kind of badass, and thanks for the pictures. Pretty much, if you're in a faraway place, I'm going to be asking you for some pictures because, well, that's just fun. So,
yeah.
Yeah, if you're in a different country, by all means, you know. Fuck it. If you're in the U.S., I don't care where you are. Send some pictures. Love seeing new parts of the world.
And from Dave. At Gwen Experience, via Twitter, this is about episode 75, the child sacrifice episode, at Atheist Nomads, what a depressing episode. It really brings to light the danger and insanity of all religious extremists. I had to go through that three times, recording, and then I actually had to do two passes editing. Depressing describes it well. He admitted that he only made it through the first half hour.
Damn.
Yeah. This is going on. This is real. And the scary thing is, it's so depressing that nobody wants to think about it. And if people aren't willing to think about it or talk about it, it's not going to change.
It just keeps happening.
Yeah. And kids will keep dying. And that's what's depressing. Yeah.
Yeah, buddy.
And I do want to just do a little bit of a reminder on feedback privacy. Generally speaking, anything you email us, unless you say otherwise, we may read on the show. We will use your name as you sign your letter. If you have anything you want to take out, you can say, please leave this part out. However, when it comes to locations, as a rule of thumb, unless you explicitly state otherwise, I will not go more specific than country, or in the case of, like, U.S., Canada, Australia, Britain, state or country or province. So, like, you know, it's one thing if you say you're in London, There's a bazillion Bobs in London, so who cares if we say London? But if you say that you're in some little tiny town, let us be explicit if you want that much red. Capital cities are a lot more likely to get leeway because they do tend to be very large. But yeah, we want to protect you. So yes, you can email us at contact@atheistnomads.com. You can call us at 541-203-0666. Tweet us at atheistnomads or hit us up on Facebook, facebook.com/atheistnomads.
And always feel free to use the Amazon click-through so we get a little kickback of whatever you're buying. It's the easiest way to support the show, and we will never tell what sex toys you buy, even though that those are all of mine. also, don't forget to, you know, we'd appreciate it if you want to kick us a couple bucks if you like what we're doing here. So Patreon's the best way to do that. So yeah, go ahead and set it up. Be much appreciated. I definitely have some big plans about helping others in the future here that'll be coming out once we actually get some decent dollars coming to the show.
Yeah.
So anyways, thank you so much, everybody.
And Robert Ray and Virginia Don both switched to Patreon.
Hey, sweet.
That's now, I think, three of our supporters that have made that move. It's a pretty slick system. And from my perspective, it's easier to contact you on there than it is if you're a PayPal sponsor, because I can just send a message to all patrons.
Oh, not bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
does it BCC to everybody?
Oh, I think it probably just sends out individually to everyone.
Okay. Either.
So, yeah.
Okay. Sweet.
Well, I think that's a show.
Yeah. Well, see you guys in another week.
Yeah. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Atheist Nomads. You can find us online at www.atheistnomads.com. Contact us at contact@atheistnomads.com or leave us a voicemail message at 541-203-0666. You can also like us on Facebook or leave us a review on iTunes, Zoom, or wherever else you find the podcast. Until next time, this has been the Atheist Nomads.